Hello, and welcome to the Electric and Eclectic Podcast Show with Roger Adkins and some truly super smart and amazingly interesting guests. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Great, okay. So welcome everybody to episode 11 of Electric and Eclectic, the podcast show. It's actually episode 1 of 2022, and I really wanted to start off with, I think, one of the most, well, clearly one of the most important areas of the electric vehicle revolution and many other things. Energy. Where do we get our energy from? How do we manage to put it in the right place at the right time at the right price? And given we've got a real maelstrom at the moment of challenges with all sorts of aspects of energy, which is knocking on to the electric vehicle proposition, I couldn't think of a better person to talk to right now than Fiona Howarth. So Fiona, how are you? You're Managing Director of Octopus Electric Vehicles. So welcome. How's the start of the year been for you? We're hurtling through January. We're almost at the end of it. How's the first month been, Fiona?
Thanks, Roger. Well, it's great to be here. Such a pleasure to be on this podcast with you. January so far, so good. So I think there's such momentum in the EV space. There is so much excitement. People are excited. We've got over 50 different models now of cars that people can get from us. Great electric cars. And just the momentum is super high. The only challenge we're seeing is a lack of supply. So actually, people want them, but we can't get our hands on them quick enough to be able to get them out into the market.
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting arena to kick off with. We'll come back to that. We'll go through that in detail. But I just want to talk a bit about you first so people understand your sort of journey. I always default to the LinkedIn profile just to get that gist of who someone is, because you choose to put what's on there. So I think that's always quite revealing. Research.
What I've put on, Roger.
Well, I'm going to remind you. Research student at Dyson Research. What a place to start. So that's back in 1999. What a fantastic place to start. Can you give us, I know it's a long time ago now, but can you give us a little sense of how did you feel going into such an environment as Dyson, right at the beginning of your career? How's that impacted on what you do today, do you think?
Well, I mean, that was super exciting and hugely innovative. So I just left school. I was ready to go to university, but I had a gap year, basically. And I was working on the high-speed motor team. So, you know, in all of the hand dryers, there's a motor called X20. And I was working on that team. And what we used to do is we used to run these motors as fast as we could. And then different components would basically blow up because they were running so fast. And we'd work out where the weak components were. And we'd try a different component. And then we kept on doing it until we basically optimized to have this super robust, really fast brushless motor. And it was really, really exciting. So we were kind of iterating, developing, testing, very classic agile development, actually, in terms of getting out there, you try something, you iterate, you test, you learn, you do it again. And we were kind of going around that cycle. And I think that's actually with me core skills to take me through to where we are today, where actually a lot of my kind of career has been iterating, testing, developing, iterating, testing, and so you enable yourself to find out what works and then scale it.
Well, I think that's a beautiful description, because I do think that's a kind of, yeah, that's very much a template for what a career could be. The actual, the way you go from different companies and do different things, let alone the work you're actually doing there, which, as you say, testing things to destruction. I think iteration of things, but then jumping into new ideas. I can see that's what you've done in your career, which is fascinating. Carbon Trust, Bain & Co, Department of Energy and Climate Change, Head of Transformation at OVO Energy. I was talking to Stephen Fitzpatrick about the energy crisis, actually, just before Christmas. And clearly there is, there's some epic challenges right now for consumers, number one, let alone industry and everybody else. However, obviously, looking again, as you've gone through that career line, and then you're at Octopus Energy, Director of Smart Projects, and now the CEO of Octopus Electric Vehicles, it all fits. You know, I love this. I was just hoping, I was counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, I was hoping there had been 8 different jobs you'd have, which is why you're now at Octopus.
Well, I tell you what, there's a couple of startups that I haven't put on there that I worked on for a bit. I think I might have independent consultant and founder on there. But as with all entrepreneurs, you try stuff and sometimes it's not the right time or it doesn't work. And so you move on. So actually, there's a couple of startups in there that may or may not be on the profile. But I think that's the theme, isn't it? I think when I was at school, you know, I had this conversation with my physics teacher, and he was describing the fact that we were burning all these fossil fuels that we were dependent on other countries for, that, you know, were bad for the environment. And actually, there was an alternative. There was an alternative that was clean, renewable energy that we could basically harvest energy locally, right, with wind power and solar and that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, why are we not doing that? Why are we burning all of these basically assets that have been created over billions of years, right? The petrol and diesel that we've got in our cars and gas that power our homes. And he's like, it's just the way it is, Fiona. It's the way that the economy's grown up. It's very difficult to change. And I was like, but it doesn't make sense. Surely we should be doing the clean, healthy alternative that's, you know, not destroying our planet. And he's like, oh, it's just the way it is. And I was like, well, at some point we're going to run out of it. In 50 years, we will have run out of petrol and diesel. So we won't be driving those cars. So that was kind of what seeded this interest for me in terms of during my lifetime, we were going to transition to a different type of mobility. And actually, as part of the Dyson experience, I then went to university. And as part of that, I was speaking to some of the fellows from the Royal Academy of Engineering. I did engineering at uni. And I was like, I want to do electric cars. And they're like, no, no, Fiona, it's not electric. You want to look at hydrogen. So this is what, 2002 maybe? Like, you want to look at hydrogen and fuel cells. So I did some research and it turned out that at that point, BMW had already been developing hydrogen fuel cells for 20 years. So yeah. I went and I said, hey, can I come and work with you? So I did. I went and did 6 months doing PEM fuel cell technology in Germany, in Munich, which was amazing again, really, really fun. And then I went around the world investigating the hydrogen economy. And actually, you learn things about, you know, the chicken and egg challenge, right? So what comes from the cars or the charging infrastructure? It's really very challenging to roll out a hydrogen charging infrastructure if there are no cars to use it. There's no business case to be able to do that. The investment doesn't go there. You know the story. Anyway, there are technical challenges. And what became clear in that point was that EVs would come first. Hydrogen would probably follow at a later stage as it matured, and it would probably be big vehicles first, which were in more predictable routes and didn't need the same breadth of infrastructure. So actually at that point, I already knew that I was quite into EVs, but I really wanted to be on the commercial side and not the technical. So actually that's when I went into the commercial side and did some things in venture capital. I went to Bain to learn some more commercial skills. I then went to government, as you said, and that's where I discovered things like demand side response. So when you have lots of intermittent energy, actually you need to balance that energy system. And then there was this beautiful moment where you realize that renewable energies are going to come at the same time as electric vehicles, and you're going to have batteries on everyone's driveways. Everyone's going to have that's when I got into demand side response and ended up in the Internet of Things connected homes technology company. And that's what took me into then thinking about smart EV charging, ending up at Octopus, which we can talk more about what I do. But there's a kind of a big theme there in terms of renewable energy and EVs for me, which has always been a bit of a North Star.
Wow. Wow. What a run through. And I think people listening to this, if they're anything to do with electric vehicles or renewable energy, and let's be honest, I think most people who would be interested in a podcast that says electric and eclectic probably would be, Fiona. They get that. What you've said is so significant. This nexus of electric mobility and renewable energy both needing a particular asset, the battery. So we can talk a bit about that for sure, because I've got a few concerns around that, which I'd like to share with you. But let's talk about Octopus, because can you tell me about the name? So why is Octopus Energy? It's one of those names where and Octopus Electric Vehicles and Octopus Renewables and all these different octopuses. The octopus is an extraordinary creature, isn't it? What's it got? Three hearts and People say if any creature on the planet Earth is an alien form, life form, it's the octopus. So is there any particular origin? Why is the company called this, Fiona?
Do you know, it's actually related to one of our first shareholders in Octopus. There's Octopus Investments. And the CEO, there's two co-founders, and the CEO co-founder, Simon Rogerson, is very passionate about customer service. So I met him in my very, very early days. And he wanted to disrupt industries where, you know, we were underserved and we kind of didn't always get the best service we possibly could. So things like care homes where you wanted to live yourself, or financial services. And energy was one of them at the time. And he met Greg, who had really wanted to start a tech energy company. So how do we help people based on tech have a great experience in the energy space, particularly with decarbonisation? And actually, for me, Octopus symbolises this passion for customer service, the passion for doing things really brilliantly and looking after customers. And what it symbolises is a brand that you want to have in your home. That's what he used to describe it as. And so actually, for me, it's no longer the kind of animal as it was, you know, as you just described, but actually more this kind of symbol of this great experience and this great service. And actually, during my time at Octopus on the car side, I've not always been able to achieve that as much as I'd like. So actually, it's been quite a fight to be able to achieve this kind of Octopus level of service. So actually, it came from that kind of that initial stakeholder, shareholder, Simon, and the kind of backing that he brought with it.
Right. Okay, because I'm just looking at the website, Octopus Energy website. Man, there is some cool stuff going on. Octopus Renewables enters three new electricity supply deals in Sweden, Finland and Scotland. Octopus Energy Group and CPP Investments announced strategic partnership. Octopus Energy enters Italy with acquisition of customer obsessed. There you are. There's your phrase, customer obsessed. Energy from firms Sato. I mean, you're not a company that's just got going. Yeah, this will do. It's the ambition in here is huge. I guess it really is. It applies to the scope and scale of where we need to go with renewables. Renewables in terms of their feed into the grid. And then, of course, this is, I guess, where your expertise is now going to come in. The building out of an ecosystem of batteries, of storage, in order to... Is it a reality? Well, let's get on to it. Vehicle to grid and grid to vehicle. Is this stuff really going to happen? Or is it just a lovely concept, which in the reality of, well, how does the housing stock work? How do the substations, you know, around the corner for everyone's house cope, et cetera, et cetera. Is this just a nirvana objective kind of thing, Fiona? Or do you really think we are going to see the batteries in our cars become part of the renewable energy revolution?
Actually, I would argue that they already are, in that we are powering our cars with green energy. So already it's you know, a green part of the green revolution. And then actually with smart charging, we're taking the energy consumption from the car, from the peak time into the middle of the night when the energy system is least used, underutilized. So we've got a couple of tariffs, for example. The most simple one that we have is Octopus Go, and that has 4 hours of inexpensive electricity between 12:30 and 4:30 every night. And you can set that up with your tech, so it automatically starts charging at 12:30 and goes through. And there's different flavours of that actually. So we've got Octopus Go Faster. So there's different windows where people have opted to maybe take a slightly earlier window, a slightly later window, because we wanted to test whether or not people would be okay with that for different price signals and things. And actually, definitely there's appetite to, you know, people aren't so fussed whether it's 12:30 or it's 11 p.m. that the car starts charging, as long as it's at the amount that they want when they're ready to leave in the morning. So actually, typically, we don't recommend you top up to 100% of your battery. You might top up to, say, 80%. So you say, okay, I want 80% by 7 a.m. so that I can commute to work or drop my kids off. And that's what matters, right? So that you get to that point by 8 a.m. or if you're doing a longer journey, then maybe to 100%. So already that Go tariff is already encouraged people to make that switch. The next flavor of that is Octopus Agile. Octopus Agile is a time of use tariff that follows the wholesale market price. So you get fresh pricing every day. It comes out about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's based on the wholesale market, the day ahead pricing. So it's literally got half hour slots. Now, it's worth noting at this point that we've built our own tech platform called Kraken, which is a full billing and CRM platform, and now has a flex part of it we can talk about as well. But that enables us to have these smart tariffs, these flexible tariffs that can literally have a different price point every day for each half hour signal. Now, what we've found as well is that we've got smart technology now that's taking the API, taking that pricing data from the API, reading it and saying, okay, Roger wants to be topped up to 80% by 6 a.m. What's the cheapest time for him to be able to do that? Is it between 12 and 2? Is it between 2 and 4? It can change each day. And so actually in your scenario, it could be 12 till 2 tonight, it could be 2 to 4 tomorrow, and it just optimizes all of it. And so what we found is sometimes we in the UK, because we need to balance that energy system, when there's too much energy going onto the grid, very, very windy nights, a lot of wind, we're all asleep, no one's using it. Actually, we're saying to those wind turbines, stop producing, stop turning, stop giving us that electricity. And actually, we give them a subsidy. So we're basically paying them still, even though they're nothing. And the energy price goes negative. So this agile price goes negative sometimes. And that is hugely encouraging. We give this alert out to our customers and we're like, the price is going negative. And what we found is that, you know, people try and like schedule everything. They've got their dishwasher teed up for that time, you know, their tumble dryer, whatever it might be, because actually it's really inexpensive green energy that's going onto the grid and they are making the most of it. My favorite was actually that some kid apparently tried to, you know, to persuade her mum she should play Xbox at 7 a.m. in the morning. Well, she was like, look, mum, I'm getting paid to do it. We'll get paid for the energy I'm using to play my Xbox right now.
But oh, I love that. That's great.
Was engaged in this kind of like energy system concept that there was this oversupply of green energy at that point and they should be, you know, encouraged to, you know, do whatever they need to do with the electricity at that point rather than later when it's expensive.
Yeah. Listen, that's a fantastic explanation, but unfortunately what it's done is it's made me feel like I'm a complete dimwit, and for all that I purport to know or think or say, I clearly know nothing, because I simply plug in my car and just whenever I've been with Bulb, sadly, who've met their demise, as unfortunately many have the last, you know, number of months. But there wasn't any kind of tariff there anyway, quite frankly, any kind of dual tariff. So you've made me feel quite envious. The other thing I'd just like to quickly talk about on there is how smart can smart get? So, for example, different, as you know, different EVs have a different charging performance. So if I want to use those 4 hours, the cheapest electricity, what I'd really like to be able to do, if I'm that clever, is get my car to be taking the energy in when it can take most in, you know, when it's when it's charging. Can you do that stuff as well? Is it that clever?
Well, so the cars, it's not all in the cars yet, but you can do it through your charger or even through your cable. I love this when I discovered it. So the only...
I love your enthusiasm. Honestly, this is what so much of business, life, all that it should be about. If you have the passion and enjoyment, you can become, it's so powerful. I can hear that in your voice and how you're talking about this. So tell me the next tip, because I need to learn.
So the OMI cable basically has a box in the cable and you can have it type 2 to type 2, whatever, or you can have a type 2 to a 3-pin plug, even, or even to a commando socket, I think they even did. And you can, so it's retrofittable with any untethered charging point, or you can even use it with your 3-pin plug. And what it does is it looks at our API and the charging, the times, the cheap, when it's cheapest, or it even actually takes a feed from National Grid for when it's greenest. And it optimizes for you. You get an app, you tell it what you want, and then it will optimize every day based on what the pricing signal is telling it, or based on what that green signal is telling it from National Grid. And so it just does it. So that box is connected to the cloud and it's looking at the pricing signal. It's saying, okay, charge now, stop charging now, charge again now, stop charging now. And it just does it all for you. It's absolutely beautiful. And in fact, they can now communicate directly into some of the vehicles. So they can connect directly into the Tesla. So actually where I live, they've dictated the charger that I can have on my wall. Now, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful Anderson one, but it's not that smart. It's not a smart charger. But what's amazing is that even without using the Omi cable, actually, they're now talking directly to my car, and they can now optimize and make that, you know, charge at the cheapest times, even using this dumb charger that I've got on the wall. So it's really, really exciting times where you've got such amazing technology.
Yeah, well, and efficiency. You know, the core in all of what you're talking about there is maximizing efficiency, which is, you know, a core platform of circular economics and so much more. Well, home economics, you know, we all want to minimize our expenditure. I've just thought of an idea, by the way, because I like to think of myself as a creative person. You could have a new turn of phrase in your company that you optimize. You know. What do you think?
I like it. We could. I'm sure you were up at COP, and in COP there was Coptimistic. Maybe we could have, you know, an optimistic as well.
Yeah. Well, look, if it works, if it's about efficiency, helping people save money, getting the job done, call it what you like. You know, as long as it works, that's the core. In fact, I had your website up. EDF strikes deal to move its 5 million customers onto Octopus Energy Group's Kraken platform, exactly as you've been describing. So this is amazing.
That platform does three things, actually. That platform does, it's very efficient, and it's been super optimized in a cloud-based platform, very scalable. And so actually the cost to service customers is much lower than with some of the existing platforms in the market. So already energy companies can offer a better rate out to customers because they can do that at a lower cost. The second bit is the tools that the customer service agents have are much better than what they do on other systems. So actually, if you do have a question for them and you call through, they can access your information in a much more efficient way. So actually, they can solve more of your problems. And the operating model around it is based in little teams that deal with groups of customers. So instead of you calling into a home move team and a billing team and a metering team, actually, there's one team that you can come into every time you call us. It'll be the same team. And actually, they can deal with all of your problems. So that's the second part. And then the third part for me is this smartness. It's like a playground where we can create new tariffs, we can do flexibility. And actually, we haven't kind of moved on to that vehicle to grid piece in more detail, but that flexibility part of the platform is actually syncing up with National Grid, helping to balance the system and actually enabling some of the vehicles that we've got on V2G to be the first electric vehicles that will participate in the balancing mechanism.
Wow. You know, I'm almost breathless listening to this because, you know, it's the stuff that people aren't aware of where, you know, the popular sense of, well, will we have enough electricity? Will all these electric vehicles, you know, come in and give us all these massive problems? In fact, they're an opportunity, aren't they? They're more a solution than a problem.
Yeah, they're absolutely a core part of the solution. Right. Help make this switch.
Right. Given then, what you're talking about, and as people get to understand that and think, well, this is how I can manage my energy bill, maybe even, you know, in some aspects reduce it from what you would have spent. How do we as an industry, you and I and many others, go on the journey of helping people understand it, of education, in other words? Because one thing I have in my mind, you know, let's call it in this country, Robert Llewellyn's army. That's what it is, really. You know, dear Robert was there right at the beginning of so much of this, you know, with his fully charged stuff, which, you know, he mostly did on his own. And now he's got a team and it's pretty epic. But we all kind of, we're familiar with these terms, AC, DC, type 1, type 2, CHAdeMO, etc. But if you talk to anyone who's never had an EV, it sounds like some kind of foreign language. How do we ensure that we don't just all too often assume people know what we're talking about? It's not a question of dumbing it down, but how do we simplify all of this so it's a bit more straightforward, and when people are busy doing their jobs and running their life, they don't have to learn about electricity and AC/DC, because it's like, just tell me where do I plug it in? Where do I pay? You know, is it better? You know, how do we get to that point?
Yeah, simplicity is really important and really key for this. And we see this a lot about like the transition to mobile. So I don't know when, if you remember getting your first mobile phone. Did you get it from a shop? Maybe like a Phones for You, a car phone warehouse?
No, I got it from work. It would look like a field phone. I looked like I was in the army. It was a great big thing, you know.
That's fascinating. So there's two different sides of this. One is the how do you get your phone and how did you discover the new terminology, right? Because at that point, we didn't have data allowances, like how much data did you want? Were there like, it was a contract even, because actually we didn't have monthly contracts. Before that, we used to have a contract with BT and we'd pay like a probably standing order or something for our landline that we'd had for years and there was no innovation. So actually in this new world where you've got tech that's developing quickly, there's going to be a new version out in 2 years. Do I want to buy this? Do I not? What does the contract look like? Are you going to overcharge me if I send more text messages? These things, text messages. We need experts that can help people through that experience. And actually where we see there are kind of companies and car manufacturers that kind of really embedded in that. So like people like Tesla, you go in there and they help you not just think about the car, but also the charging and whether it's public or at home, what that might look for you and help you think about that new world. Because actually there's a mindset shift, right? You're no longer going to stand there with your car filling it up with its juice. Actually, you're going to plug it in, you're going to leave it. Actually, the cheapest way to do it is probably doing it over a long period of time. So where is it going to be parked the longest? And where can you charge where it's going to be parked? And it can almost top up slowly. So helping people think through that. And actually, when we discovered it, we found that if you walked into a dealership, you really got that level of service. You really got that level of expertise. And so actually, we like Robert and yourself, but in a different way, are helping people think about that in new ways. And actually, we now have a team of experts so that you can come through and speak to us about what that might be. We do roadshows. And actually, to your point around businesses, there's a big role for businesses to play. Services like salary sacrifice. So salary sacrifice is like cycle to work. It's an employee benefit. And an individual can get their car from work and pay out of their gross salary. So they save income tax and national insurance, and they pay a little bit of company car tax, but it's very low at the minute for electric cars. And so they're saving 30 to 40% every month on their car costs. So businesses, innovative businesses, big businesses are setting this up for their employees, and then they're hosting educational events. So whether it be webinars, whether it be test drive experiences, and we're getting real EV drivers to go along to businesses and on these days speak to people about what it's like. And actually, that's fantastic because it's like, you know, particularly as people are returning back to the office, it's quite a fun thing to do as well. But it means that you can have some focus. It's a real visible statement for the business getting behind clean technology, this kind of, you know, low carbon world, but also the local community because it's helping local air pollution as well. So actually, there's a big role for businesses to play as we do that. And actually, I think there's probably an opportunity for that Robert Llewellyn's army with their amazing kind of EV groups around the UK to look at their community groups and how can they share some of those experiences? Because there's two things that really help. One is getting behind the wheel of an EV. If you've not yet driven an EV, definitely do it. They're really fun. You know, get behind the wheel. The second bit, though, is actually speak to people, real drivers, about how they're charging it up. How do they experience it? How do they plan before they make that longer journey? Because right now, actually, there's some chargers that are working and some that aren't. It's useful.
Oh, talk to me about it. I think we both know this experience. Yeah. You're right. But can I pick up on a couple of things you've mentioned there? So this, like I mentioned earlier, I think I used the word nirvana. You've got solar panels on your roof. You know, you're making your own electricity. You've got a drive. You've got a lovely electric vehicle. That's fine. For argument's sake, without getting to the absolute maths, let's say that's half of the British public. Let's be UK centric for a minute. What about the other half that haven't got a drive, haven't got, you know, their own roof, that can't do it? Are they not going to become somewhat disenfranchised from this revolution that we're seeing? What about those people, Fiona?
Yeah, great question. So I'm beginning to think of this quite a bit like Wi-Fi. So, you know, Wi-Fi, you at home expect quite good Wi-Fi. At work, you expect quite good Wi-Fi for free, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then actually there are leisure locations where you also might get good Wi-Fi. My Starbucks, for example, or like other my local cafe, etc. And actually there are going to be places that are going to give you really low cost electricity to charge up your car. In fact, for free. So Tesco, there's an Asda near me that gives me free electricity to top up. I went to Cornwall last year and actually I topped up for free the Tesco that was there. So there are different locations that are going to give you electricity for free. There's also a lot of innovation going on in curbside charging. So lamppost charging or other units that come out of the ground. Again, they're going to be the key thing that adds cost for the rapid charging is things like the connection to the energy grid. So actually, when we were looking at this, we've run a number of business cases and how we can play in the charging space. And actually, the cost of the charger was nothing compared to the extra cost that you have to pay for the connection to the energy grid for the really, really, really fast charging. So actually, you're paying a lot in a premium to get access to that really fast charging. And that's more like Wi-Fi on a plane. And you're only going to use it when you absolutely need to, for convenience, where you really, really need that super rapid charging. It's an absolute mind shift now in terms of like, where are you going to get that? So I don't know if you remember driving a petrol car, but I used to know the price. Actually, at Dyson, I have very clear memories of being at Dyson, which is in the Cotswolds, which is beautiful. And it was like my first time being away from home. I had a car and I knew the price of every petrol pump. I didn't take home much money and it really mattered to me. There's pence on the petrol. And so I knew the prices at any time. I followed them. And actually, people will do the same with their electricity. They will optimize to where they can do it for lowest cost. And lowest cost is probably going to be slow. And they will pay for the convenience as and when they need to.
Yeah. Now, I can agree with some of that. It's not a question of disagreeing with you, actually. But my issue, my worry is... Well, I watched a good explanation of this. There's the fella that runs a YouTube page called EVM. He's very good, actually. He's a geezer from Yorkshire, and he just puts a little whiteboard up and he said, "So here you go, petrol cost, diesel cost, EV charging cost, and the difference between home charging, if you can get to do 70-80% of your charging at home, especially using the tariffs you mentioned and taking opportunity of, you know, those 4 hours of really inexpensive charging. It's a massive cost savings. It's the proverbial no-brainer. You know, in education terms, show that to people and say, look, over 100,000 miles, you're going to save £24,000 or something. And I think, what? You know, £2,500 a year. Well, to save £2,500 a year, you have to earn about £3,500 a year because, you know, take the tax off and all the rest of it. That's a big chunk of money. If you said to someone, here's a £3,000 or £4,000 pay rise, they'd say, oh, wow, thank you very much. You know, so again, going back to this issue of intelligent charging, overnight charging, all that can be relatively cheap. But charging in any kind of public domain is either very, very slow. Great that you can get free charging at Tesco, but it's normally only 7 kilowatts max, you know, or it's really expensive. So again, how do we try and just not disenfranchise half of the population?
But I think that's actually really important, which is the people that are charging at home are using those slow chargers, right? So it's say 3 kilowatts if it's on your 3-pin plug, or 7 if you've got a home charger installed. And so it's actually for those people that don't have driveways, we need to access that slower rate charging as well, because then they get access to the grid without having to pay this absolute premium to get very fast charging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was looking at this, nerd as I am, and there are different options. So there's BP Pulse, for example. BP Pulse at the minute, £8 a month for a membership, and there's thousands of chargers that are free to use once you've signed up to that. Again, they're not that fast, so actually it needs to be kind of near your house. So actually what we need access to a number of these slower chargers near to your house. So Ubertricity and Chargy. So Chargy was another one I looked at actually last night, and they have a service where you can sign up, and it's the equivalent of about 4 pence per mile for their service, 4 or 5 pence per mile. And actually on our kind of overnight tariff at the minute is around about 2 pence per mile. That, by the way, is compared to a BMW petrol car at 15 pence per mile. So even if you're using that lamppost charging or the curbside charging from Chargy, that's still, you know, 2/3 of the saving versus what the petrol BMWs. You're maybe not doing the 80% saving as you might be doing on the Go tariff, but you're still doing a huge saving of 2/3 of that fuel costs by using the curbside one. So actually, what we are seeing as well is more innovation in people sharing those home charges as well. So you might have come across the co-charger model. Where actually,
I love that. I think that has a lot of merit. Yes.
I'm super excited about it, actually. I've spoken to a number of people over time, but we've been so focused on the leasing that I've not got around to doing it, but I'm very behind them doing it. I think it's great. It's like the Airbnb.
Exactly. Well, I've got a name for that, Airbnb. No, it's a guy called Joel Teague, I think, runs that.
Yeah.
And I think, like all people that have great ideas, often you don't get the traction, you don't get the attention, you feel frustrated, you think, oh, well, why should I bother? I'm not saying that's what Joel's saying, but you know, against everything else that's going on, I don't think he's had his voice in the way in which it deserves to be. I signed up for it last year. No one's come and used it yet, but that doesn't mean it's not good. It's like a lot of things, as you said earlier, about entrepreneurs and, you know, have to have the right timing. You have to have all these things converge and come together. But look, let's not get too hung up on charging too much. Massively and significant and important as it is, because there are a few other things, and I definitely want to get through them before we run out of time. You mentioned earlier you can't get enough of them, you know. So at the moment, it's a supply constrained market. Now, I've worked in the auto industry. I worked for a manufacturer. I worked for the Volkswagen Group for 10 years, and I did various things. Not going to bore you, but I kind of understand the mechanism of planning, targets, production, supply chain. All those things have to come together. So in my mind, I'm thinking, are we seeing this shortage of EVs because OEMs haven't planned to make enough? Because for whatever reason, let's for a moment be a bit cynical and say, because they don't want to, because they make more still out of the petrol and diesel ones. Or is it that they can't get enough materials to build the batteries, the supply chain constraint side of it? Is it a bit of both? Or what do you think? Because I've seen a few comments on LinkedIn posts I've had. I put one up the other day, and I think it was, when Jack Scarlett was in the VW plant in Zwickau. And a few people pretty quickly were saying, yeah, this is all well and good, but, you know, I ordered an ID3 6 months ago. I haven't even got a delivery date. I haven't even had an acknowledgement. So you kind of think, well, what's going on here? What do you think? Because you're supplying a lot of EVs. Absolutely. What is your sense of it?
Well, let me give you a few thoughts on this. One is that I think demand has skyrocketed, right? I think that has gone so much more beyond what anyone can deliver. Even if they weren't full pace right now, I think we'd still see some shortages because I think, you know, they just can't make them and they can't scale up quick enough. But I guess to the next question is, do I think they are scaling up as quickly as they could? I think that's still a question. I think there's been a huge shift in this, and I think they're definitely going much faster than they were. But the reality is that I think Bloomberg New Energy Finance estimate that they're going to be at what they call price parity by about 2026 in Europe. So anywhere between 2025 and 2028. But within that period of time, they're going to hit what they call price parity. I almost think of as margin parity, which is where they're going to make the same amount of money in a petrol car as an EV, even without the subsidies if they're selling at the same price, right? Because the cost base is going to be the same.
Okay.
So actually, until that point, the way our economy works is that actually there's a lot of expectation on businesses to optimize financial outcomes. And actually, if you or I were running those businesses as well, there'd be a lot of people that would be looking for us to optimize financial outcomes. And actually, in their short term, their financial outcome is optimized by selling more of those petrol and diesels. So actually, it's not even that you have to be too cynical, but there is a huge incentive for them to do that and to optimize that. Now, the reality is that they're going to lose market share, and we're already starting to see that. So what we've seen is last year, obviously, there's a huge number of cars that have come to market in the EV space. And at the beginning of last year, the inquiries on cars for us were dominated by Tesla. Over 40% of our inquiries were Tesla. By the end of the year, less than 10% were on the Model 3. And actually, it hugely fragmented into lots and lots of other cars, and lots of other manufacturers were taking up market share of those inquiries.
Interesting.
Significant emergence of inquiries for Audi, for the VW, actually the ID3 and ID4, very popular. But a lot of other cars were starting to see a huge increase in terms of appetite and interest from the kind of general population. And so Tesla kind of losing their foothold. But interestingly, come December, over 50% of our deliveries were Tesla. So they were able to supply and deliver actually much more ahead of these other manufacturers. So even if we had interest, we lost some of the orders because the lead times were so long. Some of the cars were over a year's waiting list. So people said, actually, I don't want to wait a year. I need a car in the next few months. I'm going to find another alternative. So we lost customers because they couldn't get their hands on it, or they switched into a car they could get sooner, or they're just still waiting. And actually,
That's why we've seen the dynamics in the market where the used price is going up, because people have defaulted to used cars because they couldn't get a new one in time, as you say. The chip shortage fundamentally has been at the heart of the vehicle supply constraint overall. But you mentioned Tesla there, and there's, 50% of your suppliers in January. Because they vertically integrated, they were able to revisit some of what they needed in terms of supply chain and kind of do it themselves. This is the extraordinary thing. I don't know if we mentioned it on this call, or you and I have talked about it before, but, the vertical integration of Tesla is the Ford, Henry Ford playbook. It's exactly what Henry Ford did when he put together the beginnings of building, mass production of internal combustion engine vehicles. Elon Musk has just basically learned the same lessons: maximize margin, control your supply chain, actually have better control over your R&D so that you can do it yourself, and all of that.
So I understand that they were able to see that chip shortage coming more quickly, and then be able to rewrite code for other chips that they could get access to, and also bulk buy. Whereas I think the other car manufacturers are basically assemblers. So I don't think they were as close to the supply chain of those chips in the first place. So they didn't see it coming as quickly. And then they didn't even know fully where all the chips were within the vehicles, because they basically bought parts that had those chips in, and they had so much less control of being able to manage that and actually use their abilities to, say, rewrite code in the same way that Tesla did. It's fascinating.
Yes, you've got it in a nutshell there. Absolutely, absolutely. Look, we've probably got another 10 minutes of chat. So can I just in one way loop back right to the beginning? There you are, start of your career as a student at Dyson. We heard, it's a couple of years ago now, quite a lot of noise coming out of Malmesbury about the Dyson electric car. We then saw the revelation of Mr. Dyson himself explaining why there wasn't going to be a Dyson electric car now, which was a huge disappointment to me, and I think many others, because of his track record of innovation and doing things radically differently. Any thoughts on that, just out of interest?
I would also be very excited to see more coming out of the UK. But I think there's a lot that the UK is doing very actively in this space in terms of battery innovation. It's fantastic to see the new battery factories that are getting support, like the British Volt announcement.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
And so actually, although we might not be producing those cars in the same way that, that new Dyson EV had kind of promised to be, we are still doing a huge amount across the piece. I think we could be doing a lot more. And I think actually there's still an opportunity to pull it together and do more in this space. And I equally was disappointed to see them pull out of that race, but it is what it is.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Okay, a couple of other areas which intrigue me. I won't go back through my whole historical connection to it, but battery swap. We're now seeing in China a massive move on battery swapping, getting the government behind it with standardization, significant OEMs investing heavily in it. NIO now with over, 700-800 charging stations around the country. Geely being involved in it. Just big companies. And then the other protocol, which I'm familiar with, is wireless charging. So in your kind of sense of the electric vehicle journey, I know we talked a lot about charging infrastructure, but it would be remiss of me not to ask you your opinion on those two things, battery swapping and wireless charging. What's your sense and feel of where they might go or not?
It's interesting. I mean, I'd love to see more of the business models for what's happening in China, what that consumer proposition is. So actually, the kind of closest proxy that we have to this is the Renault Zoe. So if you take the Renault Zoe, when it first came out, there was a battery lease element to it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is almost a parallel to what we might see in the kind of battery swapping world, because actually you're paying for the use of a battery, which could be brand new, or it could be 3 years old, or it could be 7 years old. There was actually a real challenge with that when it went into the secondhand market, because the battery lease was still pretty hefty, because it was equivalent to whether or not you're paying for a new battery or an old battery. Whereas actually, typically what happens is you get a car that goes into secondhand market and the bulk of the costs are pretty much halved, right? And so actually people were expecting that kind of battery lease to also have halved, but it hadn't halved. It hadn't dropped in cost. So actually it made it much less attractive to take that Renault Zoe as a secondhand car. And it hugely confused our auction system, our secondhand remarketing channels. And it was really penalizing to the Zoe, where actually then it meant that the residual values didn't succeed very well. It meant the upfront leasing costs were really punitive. And actually for what was, I think, a secret weapon in the EV space, it just didn't perform nearly as well as it should have done. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot to think about in terms of that consumer space. And you'd need to really approach the market in a very different way and be prepared to, I think, do it almost fully integrated. I don't think you can do it with the normal standard kind of car markets that we have today. If you were to do that, you'd have to really transform the whole system.
Hmm. Well, it's now in Norway, as I'm sure you know. They've got their first battery swap station. I think they're building out plenty of others. I'm actually going out to Norway with some people. It's a private thing, so I can't talk about that. Just for people
I thought I was about to get an invite. That sounds great.
Well, no, to go to NIO, to go to the swap station, but also to go and see, there's a wireless charge. I've been in a Jaguar I-Pace charging at over 50 kilowatts wirelessly.
Wow.
Because I think the point about, I mentioned earlier about the disenfranchised group, if you like, in terms of they don't have the right environment. I think wireless charging, theoretically, we'll see, won't we, but could play a pace in this. I know a bit about it. And I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but wireless charging initially for buses and taxis and vans, I think, has a lot of great prospect, because they're typically closed loop environments. They're charging arenas that can be, if you like, I won't call them privatized as such, but focused on particular duty cycles and particular vehicles. And then if and as and when they can be opened out to other vehicles that can receive a wireless charge, that could be part of it too. So
what efficiencies they're getting, Roger?
Mid-90s, 95-96%.
Wow.
So similar to cable charging, because cable charging is not 100% efficient. There's always some kind of loss, parasitic loss of some description. But I have a claim to fame, which I must mention. I mention it too often, because it sounds like it's the mention of a desperate man who's just I once asked Elon Musk this question: out of wireless charging, battery swapping and fast cable charging, Elon, what was the future of charging likely to be, and would one of those ultimately prevail? Because I have a huge amount of respect for the guy. I mean, he's one of a kind, there's no doubt. But he said wireless charging was difficult with alignment and efficiency. Funny you mentioned efficiency.
Yeah.
And then he also said swap, because they integrated that into the engineering of the Model S. I don't think it's on the Model 3. That if people wanted it, they would give it. But the fact was then people were buying and acquiring the whole asset, your point about split asset, and that wasn't what they wanted. But I think, meanwhile, over in China, the resurgence of it from the Better Place days is around, I think, fleet operations, potentially, as we go towards driverless cars and all this stuff, maybe these are kind of outliers of what's to come rather than a good fit for what we've got today. So, I take your point.
That you can get much higher utilization out of it if you have that kind of service, and it's much more standardized. I think that's quite exciting. I think the contactless for me becomes even more exciting when it's autonomous driving. So if you've got a kind of fleet of vehicles that can then go and they can just charge up without anything having to be plugged in or unplugged or whatever, it's very, very smooth and seamless. And if you could get high efficiency in that kind of scenario, I think that's very exciting.
Well, I'm going to be making a couple of videos on this. I'm going to be out in the States filming electric buses charging at 300 kilowatts because it's on a modular system. So I'm going to do as much as I can to ask the right questions, show the right stuff, and let people make their own minds up based on the evidence rather than any kind of, you know, oh, well, it's coming. Oh, well, this. Because I think, you know, we both know in the EV world, so much of stuff is coming. But what you and I, particularly you and your job, have to deal with is what have we got today? You know, what can I sell today? What are people using today? How does it work today? Yes, we want to see innovation come. But, you know, the practical reality is, you know, what can I buy now? How much will it cost? Is it the right thing? And away we go. So look, you've given us a really, there's so much more we could talk. I can't believe an hour has gone by because really you have had this amazing career. I can see how it's all joined up beautifully to be who you are and what you're doing today, Fiona. Thank you for sharing so much of that with us. Maybe we should do this again sometime, you know, maybe later on in the year, because it's as you say, a rapidly unfolding story, and you've shared so much. But go on, have the final word, please.
This is good. I loved hearing about the wireless charging things. You'll have to tag me when you post them, and I'd love to keep the conversation going. It's been an absolute pleasure, and yeah, I'd love to do it again.
Wonderful. Well, Fiona Howarth, thank you and good luck. And I hope the supply of all these electric vehicles your customers are desperate to get their hands on starts to come through a bit faster. And we can look forward to an exciting 2022. So for now, thank you for your time and goodbye.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to the show. And make sure to follow Roger on LinkedIn, where you'll discover almost all there is to know about the spectacular electric vehicle revolution.